That change now, you look at changing A to L, and I got to smile just a little bit because, like, wow, this feels a lot like back then when everyone was worried about 410A.
Right.
And, you know, then you get curious, mm-hmm. you go through that change curve,
yep.
and then you get comfortable.
Yeah.
ESCO Learning is now on the go with the HVACR Learning Network app. Access your courses, learn on the go, chat with community, get updates, and more. Keep your HVACR learning journey moving. Visit hvacr.elearn.network or scan the QR codes below.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us once again on Did You Know? The ESCO HVAC Podcast. So we are spending some time at the National HVACR Education Conference working with our industry partners to improve education and training for our entire industry. And I am just blown away with how Daikin is supporting this effort, right? Supporting the conference, supporting training, and all sorts of new initiatives from Daikin. So today we're going to introduce you to David Hutchison, the new VP of Technical Services North America for Daikin. And David, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
You know, we spent some time getting to know each other a little bit in the expo the other day, and you've got a very extensive background in the industries, but also as that technician as well, right? So tell us a little bit about, like, your history and how you got into the industry, and then that way we can start diving into, like, what is going to be the mission for, like, technical services going forward.
Sure. So in 1988, I'm a curious kid in a lawnmower shop and a part-time job at Sears.
There you go.
And a manager came up one day and said, if you like it, you want to be a technician.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so I worked myself through college. Being a technician for Sears, back when Sears had 10,000 technicians.
Yeah, had their own entire army.
And Sears University was huge. I was immediately in Atlanta for 2 weeks learning small engines, but then cycled through many other products.
Yeah.
And so when you were a Sears technician in the early 90s, your route was not all HVAC. It could be lawnmowers, laundry, refrigerators.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had to learn many of the different products, and inside the home, in the attic, outside, in the back 40, fixing a tractor.
That's true too.
So there are some fundamental service practices that are across the industry and across the product.
Yeah.
And that was probably the greatest learning as I worked myself through the University of South Florida, where once I graduated there, Sears gave me a unique set of opportunities over 27 years.
Well,
the end of the story was Vice President, Southeast Region, but in between there was the normal progression, tech manager, general manager, RGM, did some roles in the home office, some service quality, one of the first six people in the company. Selected it through the Six Sigma Black Belt program, trained as a master black belt.
Yeah.
And then one of the HVAC-related opportunities is I ran the National Service Organization for HVAC, where we integrated the technical workforce in with the sales workforce, which is what the industry does anyway.
Yeah.
So the Sears caught up decades later.
Sure.
And that's where we learned that service as a lead source is the number one way to drive a sales organization in the residential arena. And then that's when I finished as the regional vice president. But unfortunately, Sears' decline was in the news over and over. Mm-hmm. Home Depot had been calling for some time.
Mm-hmm.
And so went over to Home Depot, and what an experience that was.
Yeah.
I ran the entire exteriors in-home sales division. So if it was roofing, attic insulation, front doors, windows, siding.
Wow.
I had 2,000 100% commissioned salespeople in the home.
Wow.
And that's where I learned the sales side of home improvements.
Right.
And after a couple of years, I was having some conversations with Conn's Home Plus. If you don't know Conn's, they were a Southeast-based retailer that was 137 years old, based out of Beaumont, Texas, and then went over to Houston into the Woodlands.
Mm-hmm.
I was their vice president of repairs, and then also started a home improvement division with them. unfortunately, they went bankrupt last July, and I got a lead through some folks that are currently with Dyke.
And, industry partners.
And then fast forward, here I am.
Very cool. So all the way from technician in school, all the way through VPs of multiple different aspects of industry, right? All the components that make up, you know, the mechanics of structures. And I'm very... what is the word that I look for? I'm very passionate about understanding the mechanical engines as well as like anything else, right? Anything mechanical. But I don't know. It just seems like when we are drawn to things like engines and you learn that process of internal combustion, when you move into air conditioning and refrigeration, that process of internal compression stays really that whole process, right? Because in, you know, internal combustion, we are transferring gases, right? We're using liquid and vapor, and we're doing a mechanical process, and we're changing it elementally wise, but in refrigeration, we're not changing the element, but that whole process of compression, we still work with. And so I'm the same way, right? So I spent 16 years part-time working at AutoZone while I was a refrigeration technician because one, I absolutely loved engines and automobiles, and B, I got a 20% discount on parts for all the junk vehicles that I owned.
Right.
So I think they go hand in hand. Like many of us in the trades, when we say that we are a technician, that really kind of just means like we're a mechanic, and we have a curiosity and an interest in just mechanics in general. And so sometimes, particularly like with students, they may not recognize that if I already have an interest in mechanics, like the industry might be right for me, right? So do you see, what do you see as like challenges within our industry that we need to address and face over this next few years?
I would say they're definitely in labor. And I would go back to the comment on the gasoline engine. It's still a transfer of energy.
Isn't it?
From a liquid state.
Yeah.
That's atomized. Yeah. You extract the energy and you expel it through exhaust. So you look at the gas cycle of HVAC. It's just contained in a sealed system. So labor is the key.
I think so.
AI has the new frontier that will all be a part of the in-home experience. But in the end, it's still going to be a person. It's still going to be wrenches and probably an iPad. Well, we know an iPad.
There's going to be some kind of technology there.
And it's both diagnosing customers and solving them and walking through that methodical approach of fixing the customer first, the brand second, and the product third. Teaching those skills as well as the building the labor and the workforce to make sure that there's enough to meet the demand. HVAC is unique in many ways, and it's the current labor shortages, but the manufacturers like Daikin, we cannot train enough ourselves in the workforce to meet the demand.
I don't think any of us can. But then together, maybe.
you look at who's here, and you look at over 1,000 people. You look at the schools that are represented. This is the only path to be able to create and fill that labor shortage. And to see the interest and the curiosity in the room and the educators here is renews my optimism for the industry as this is the path. But the technology challenges that are entering into the industry around Internet of Things, connected homes, inverter process, new A2L refrigerants, is we as an industry need to look at it as the funnel. You've got me in 1988 learning how to fix gasoline engines. That's happening every day in the schools.
Exactly.
We need to make sure that they're exposed to the new technologies, the new products. So when they run their first route and they're on their own, they're not looking at something, I've never seen this before.
I think that's really like been the theme. We tried to intentionally make that part of the theme of this year's conference, and we weren't really sure how well it was going to be received. We knew we were going to have a pretty good turnout, and that's what we were hoping for, 1,000. That was like our goal. We actually ended up having over 1,200. And so it's been a very busy conference, and we weren't sure because we've been preaching that the programs have to be teaching this new technology. We know that you're probably not comfortable with it. You may not have even been exposed to it yet, but that's what we want to do. We want to bring you here, bring you to meet personally the manufacturers, the training, the tech services, the software companies that are developing along this lines that's making our job easier, and so that we can implement this training into the classroom. Because like you'd mentioned, like, you know, one of the important parts of being a technician is trying to understand and evaluate that customer, right? It's one thing to be able to diagnose something, but it's another to be able to communicate that diagnosis to the customer. I was talking to one software company that is specializing in a service that is using AI to analyze all of their customer service calls, so that when they get a customer service call at the contractor level, this service is now analyzing that call to get a predetermined potential scenario for what the problem is, right? It's not a solution. It's just, okay, so this is probably related to the indoor airflow or something, you know, what something of that nature. So then it's using all of the tech support replies. So the iPad that technician had been using for what the diagnosis of these problems were, all that data has been imported into that as potential things to look at for that technician in case that's a new technician and they're not 100% sure where to start. They are actually getting this artificial intelligence that's saying, according to previous calls of a similar issue, the technician found this type of a problem and they started here and this was the solution. Mm-hmm. And it's analyzing the vocal response of the customer to build a profile of the customer before you get to the job.
Wow.
And I went, whoa, we're using artificial intelligence to help a technician be prepared for a job.
I think that's critical because we can teach them to fix the products,
yes,
and the diagnostic path and the basics down to the scientific method of how we diagnose and repair what's wrong.
Right.
But when it comes to building customer loyalty, it really gets down to that the tech in the home.
Yeah.
In the service chain, there's only one face-to-face interaction.
That's right.
It's not the call center. Nope. It's not the text messages confirming. Mm-mm. It's the tech in the home.
That shows up.
And that first 15 seconds is critical. The call ahead.
Right.
Where you park. How you build the relationship with a customer is the table stakes of the in-home consumer services industry.
Yeah.
And the more we can prepare our technicians for that,
yeah.
There's a stat that really puts things in perspective.
Uh-huh.
For the average customer, they'll see a service professional in their home once every 3 years. But for that technician, it stops 6 of 8.
Yeah.
And that perception, if not understood, is where the customers don't have the relationship and won't show that loyalty.
Yeah.
In fact, there are 5 principles that I've always operated with the in-home experience. Is there's the operational items like give me the dates I want, don't reschedule me.
There you go.
Show up when you promise. Yep. Fix it right the first time.
First time.
But then there's also put a tech in my home that respects me as a customer.
Yeah.
And protects my home and product with care. Number 5 is the most important. Operational disasters happen, but when that tech builds a relationship with a customer and recovers that, they'll score them a 10 and they'll be more loyal.
Exactly.
than the customer that had the perfect same day, fixed right, never came back,
yep.
But they didn't score the experience a 10. And then you go back and you call them and you find out there was something that happened with that only face-to-face interaction in the home.
Hmm. Man, that's really starting to make more sense now from why they were so adamant of how that style of AI technology could assist that technician. You know, because what if Mrs. Jones made one positive comment, you know, that got reported on that ticket, and the next technician that comes, that first introduction, oh, hi, Mrs. Jones, I'm such and such. I heard that when John was here the last time, that he did something that was very impressionable to you and you appreciated that. And I remember Johnny was a great guy and it just completely changes the interaction from point number one. So that in case there's potential catastrophes down the road. You know, you've got a major expense, a major replacement. It's already softened that conversation and created that relationship between technician and customer.
It really is about that relationship. As human beings, we feed off of the feedback that we give each other, both verbal and nonverbal.
Right.
And when you are able to recover that customer, because they're in a panic loop.
Oh,
they're
absolutely.
Hot. And if you can reassure them and they know and you build that trust with them, then that's worth a lifetime of repeat business.
So as a technician then, I mean, it's always important to learn the fundamentals, to learn the equipment-specific training, especially from our manufacturers. What do you see as some of the most valuable training and tools that a technician should acquire?
Oh, I think it's going to have to be with the technology of understanding how we're going to go in the home and diagnose in the future.
So almost soft skills?
There are the soft skills with the customer. And, and then I mentioned the iPad.
Yeah.
The modern toolbox will have a cushion pad for an iPad.
Yeah.
And so being able to have that repair loop, customer first, brand second, and product third, when we hit specific with the product, we're going to have to understand that the technology is going to help us, but we have to be curious and seek out that education and learn.
And that technology.
How we're going to use that technology for the product servicing.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. When I was a technician, so I spent most of my time commercial refrigeration building automations. I was in residential when I got into the industry, but I spent the majority of mine commercial building automations refrigeration. And when I was in the field, an iPad was part of my tool bag, just exactly like you said. So my Klein backpack, I just gave away 2 weeks ago to a young man in high school because I got a new one. And that Klein backpack was the one that I used when I was in the field as a technician. So it held all of my tools, but the very back compartment was the laptop compartment, lockable laptop compartment. And so on the commercial side, that was expected of us to incorporate that iPad as part of my diagnostics, because most of our testing was done invasively, temperature, refrigerant gauge. I didn't carry refrigerant gauges. I had a set of Testo smart probes in my bag as a last resort. And so when we start looking at what happened in residential technology, that's actually the main reason I moved from where I was to where I am, is because I was excited about what was happening in residential, because I was already comfortable with it in the commercial side. It's like, I knew that if we're going to teach this stuff, I can assist in teaching this because I'm already comfortable with it. And I know that there's a lot of educators in residential that haven't been introduced to that yet. And so that is actually going to be more of a requirement, I think, just like you said, of a technician going forward.
Well, you mentioned comfortable. That's the output or the result of change and going through that change.
Yeah.
You were comfortable, but then the residential guy was not.
Yeah.
And I think that's another key aspect of why we're here. And the schools and the learnings that are out there is getting them comfortable. Yep. Comfortable with those new technologies. Mm-hmm. We were briefly talking earlier about the A2L transition.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was a technician transitioning from 22 to 410A.
That's right.
And there was a lot of
that was a learning curve. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Huge pressure changes when you consider
different
doubling.
Yeah.
It was that change. Now you look at changing to A2L, and I got to smile just a little bit because, like, wow, this feels a lot like back then when everyone was worried about 410A.
Right.
And, then you get curious, mm-hmm. you go through that change curve, and then you get comfortable.
Yeah. And then you go, oh, that's
not that bad.
Right. Okay. Worst case scenario, I ended up with 2 sets of manifold gauges, one for 22 with mineral and one for 410 with poly. And then when we make this transition, I actually feel, even though we've got things like refrigerant detection sensors on systems above 4 pounds and potentially on smaller ones if they're in certain applications. I mean, that is one aspect that we have to look at. That's just calculations, right? That's just a new component. But when I look at like refrigerant, whether we're going to 32 or 454B, mm-hmm. we're only going up or down a few PSI in comparison to 410. Okay. It's operating on the same refrigerant oil. Mm-hmm. I took they're now probably 9 years old Testo smart probes, right? Mm-hmm. I did a firmware update and boom, there's all my refrigerants. And so when I look at it, I go, wow, this is really not a hard transition.
Right. I would encourage everyone to go do their first one.
Yeah.
And then go do their second one. And then they're going to find themselves just as comfortable. To your point, this is not a learning curve that's steep with this transition. Yeah. So like anything else, we're tactile learners.
Yeah.
We go and do one, then do the second one, and you'll be extremely comfortable with it.
Yeah.
But it also gets down to the schools as well.
Exactly.
We need that technology in every learning lab.
Yeah.
We need not only the A2L stuff, but we need the technology, the inverter technology.
Mm-hmm.
We need to understand the communicating
network,
units and networks of the thermostats, air handler, and the condenser. Those are the technologies that we have to prepare our students for.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they run their first route, they've seen it before, and they know it. And when you look at the powerful nature of all the schools and all the educators that mm-hmm. are here, you also flip the coin and you see the opportunity of all the equipment that's in those labs.
Yeah.
How many are single stage 410?
Yeah.
We've got to, as manufacturers, and what Daikin is committed to is being a part of those labs of the future.
You bet.
But there's a lot out there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of schools, a lot of labs, and classes that are going on right now.
Yeah.
And that's our approach and our dedication to this group and this industry is we're going to have our equipment and we're going to help.
Wow. And that's so important. You know, here at ESCO, particularly on the HVAC Excellence side, who works with the accreditation and works with their schools and making sure that they're properly equipped, that has been the most interesting conversation that we've had in this last 12 months in particular, is the educators that are just now starting to look at systems going, okay, it's you know, I get to update my classroom equipment periodically. I've got some funds. And here just recently, you know, Howard Weiss had the phone call of, hey, I've got a $200,000 grant to update my labs, and here's the list of equipment that I was looking at, and I just thought I would like a professional review of what I was thinking about putting into my lab. And he went through the whole list, and he went, every single piece on here is R410A. Don't you realize that if you go buy the equipment that you're looking at, if you can even still find it in your local warehouse, your local distributor warehouse, it's on its last leg. It, like, the manufacturing of it is already over. The only things that are left is what's in the warehouse. And so this next 12 months, these things are going to be obsolete. Don't you want to prepare your students for what they're going to see? Because by the time they leave your program, there's going to be an entire new generation. Every piece of equipment a year from now that they're going to go out and install, when they leave here, it's not going to be the equipment that you are getting ready to plan to teach them on. And they went, that changes things.
Yes. And on the accreditation side as well, the curriculum.
Yeah.
It needs to be quickly adapted. What are we teaching? And that's where we can be strong partners with them, is working with the accreditations to make sure that the curriculum, it matches the equipment in the lab. And to your point, we don't need to create a fleet of 410A experts.
Yeah.
We need to have them come out with the curious nature that is required of a technician, and understanding the new technologies that are entering. I've seen the universe across multiple appliances, and you can put into concept or perspective the TV.
Yeah.
The TV technician used to be, you know, kind of top of the hierarchy.
You bet they did.
They had to know solid state. They had to know so many aspects of how a cathode ray tube worked.
Yeah, and how to test one.
Right. Now, we finished with cons using appliance technicians and an eight-hour day training course, and they were fixing TVs.
Mm.
So technology and how it enters, it goes at an exponential rate.
Yeah.
And this is where HVAC is at. When you look at inverters, you look at communicating, it's going to change. And that rate of change with technology is not going to stop with A2L refrigerants and inverter technology, communicating stuff. It's going to take the next step and the next step. So we need to prepare our students for adapting to that change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's really what Daikin has been focusing on in every aspect. We're so grateful to have Daikin here. Well, David, I'm thankful to have met you. I look forward to how you're going to impact this industry. And I know that we're going to be spending time having more of these conversations, talking about training and support. And are there ways that anyone can reach out to Daikin to learn more about how Daikin is working with the industry?
Well, there is Daikin University and HVAC Learning Campus.
There you go.
Those are your places that you want to go. Yeah. A vast library of curriculum is available for those in the industry that can learn from basics and anything specific to Daikin. So I would be curious, go look, and see what's out there. You will be surprised. It's an amazing learning tool. That's available for folks.
Free learning tools are that.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us. And I encourage everyone to go check out Daikin University. Check out the entire Daikin arsenal of training. And we will see you all again on the next episode.
Thank you, Clifton.
Thank you, sir.